Merck sees client stockpiling surge as EU legislation reshapes drug manufacturing. And number 10,022, takeaways by Plaquemium AI Hyde, and number 9,650, the European Union and hashtag X27's Critical Medicines Act received provisional approval on May 12, marking the most significant structural intervention in pharmaceutical supply security since the COVID-19 pandemic. Merck reported that clients are actively stockpiling pharmaceutical inputs due to the Iran conflict, a dynamic the company characterized as contributing to its upgraded financial guidance. The legislation aims to create a regulatory framework mandating minimum stock levels and incentivizing EU-based manufacturing to reduce reliance on non-EU suppliers and single-source providers. Institutional pharmaceutical buyers are accepting the high costs of stockpiling, working capital, warehousing, obsolescence risk, because they view supply continuity risk as even more expensive. The European Union's Critical Medicines Act advanced through provisional approval by the European Parliament and Council on May 12, marking the most significant structural intervention in pharmaceutical supply security since the COVID-19 pandemic exposed the bloc's dependence on non-EU manufacturing. The timing is not coincidental, as geopolitical shocks from the Iran conflict ripple through upstream pharmaceutical supply chains. Europe is racing to insulate itself from the type of material shortages and stockpiling behavior now visible across the industry. The proposed regulation, details of which remain under negotiation, arrives as Merck reports clients are actively stockpiling pharmaceutical inputs due to the Iran war, a dynamic the German supplier characterizes as contributing to its upgraded guidance. Europe's move to legislate pharmaceutical resilience is no longer theoretical risk management. It is a response to observable supply disruptions and a bet that regulatory intervention can redirect capital flows toward onshore manufacturing and strategic stockpiling faster than market forces alone. For institutional investors, the implications extend beyond European borders. This legislation will reshape procurement patterns, redefine what qualifies as critical inventory, and likely trigger a wave of manufacturing relocations and supply chain verticalization across the transatlantic pharmaceutical ecosystem. Why Tuesday's vote matters. Now, the Critical Medicines Act represents Europe's most concrete policy response to a problem that has haunted the sector since shortages of basic generics and active pharmaceutical ingredients became routine in the late 2010s. The provisional approval signals political consensus across EU member states and the Parliament, a non-trivial achievement given divergent national interests in pharmaceutical manufacturing capacity. The legislation's advancement comes at a moment when supply chain theory is colliding with supply chain reality. Reports from multiple fronts indicate that the Iran conflict, which escalated earlier this year, is generating upstream disruptions in pharmaceutical raw materials and precursor chemicals. Merck, a bellwether for life sciences supply given its broad footprint in pharmaceutical ingredients and laboratory supplies, has observed client stockpiling behavior significant enough to influence its financial guidance. This is not speculative hoarding. This is institutional buyers locking in supply in anticipation of tighter availability. The Act aims to create a regulatory framework for identifying critical medicines, mandating minimum stock levels, and incentivizing EU-based manufacturing. Specifics on which therapeutic classes will qualify, what stock levels will be mandated, and what subsidies or tax incentives will be deployed remain under negotiation. But the direction is clear. Europe intends to use its regulatory authority to pull manufacturing capacity back from Asia and reduce reliance on single-source suppliers. The stockpiling signal and its second-order effects. Merck's disclosure that clients are stockpiling due to the Iran war offers a rare window into behavior typically obscured within supply chain operations. Stockpiling in the pharmaceutical sector is expensive. It ties up working capital, requires expanded warehousing, and increases the risk of inventory obsolescence, particularly for products with limited shelf life. That companies are accepting these costs indicates they view supply continuity risk as more expensive still. For private equity and strategic investors, this behavior creates both risk and opportunity. The risk is straightforward. Companies with lean, just-in-time supply chains face potential margin compression or revenue shortfalls if they cannot secure inputs. The opportunity lies in businesses positioned to benefit from reshoring, nearshoring, or dual-sourcing mandates that will likely emerge from the Critical Medicines Act. The Act will almost certainly define a list of essential medicines, therapeutics where Europe has limited domestic production capacity, or supply chains dependent on geopolitically unstable regions. Expect antibiotics, generic oncology drugs, and certain biologics precursors to feature prominently. Companies manufacturing these products in Europe, or capable of scaling production there, will gain regulatory preference and pricing power. What the market may be underestimating is the speed with which procurement behavior will shift once the Act becomes law. Regulatory mandates create pull-forward effects. pharmaceutical companies and hospital systems, facing future minimum stock requirements, will begin building inventory ahead of enforcement deadlines. This will create a near-term demand surge for EU-manufactured products and penalize companies still dependent on Asian supply chains without credible diversification plans. Manufacturing relocations and the CDMO thesis: the Critical Medicines Act will accelerate a trend already underway, the migration of pharmaceutical manufacturing capacity back to Europe and North America. Contract development and manufacturing organizations with EU footprints should see structurally higher demand. Companies like Recipharm, Patheon, part of Thermo Fisher, and Lonza, which operate significant European capacity, are positioned to capture share as pharma companies scramble to comply with new sourcing mandates. The economics of pharmaceutical manufacturing are shifting. For decades, the industry optimized for cost, which meant outsourcing to India and China where labor and regulatory compliance costs were lower. That calculus is reversing. The cost of supply chain disruption, whether from pandemics, geopolitical conflict, or regulatory intervention, now exceeds the savings from offshore production for many product categories. This creates a mergers and acquisitions thesis. European CDMOs with underutilized capacity or those capable of expanding quickly will become acquisition targets. Strategic buyers will pay premiums for assets that offer immediate compliance with the Critical Medicines Act. Private equity will target mid-tier manufacturers capable of scaling production in therapeutic areas likely to be designated critical. Expect deal multiples for European pharmaceutical manufacturers to expand relative to their Asian peers. The spread will reflect the embedded value of regulatory compliance and supply security. Investors should look for companies with existing EU good manufacturing practice certifications, relationships with European health authorities, and capacity in high-volume generics or biosimilars. Geopolitical risk repricing across the value chain. The Iran conflict's impact on pharmaceutical supply chains underscores a broader repricing of geopolitical risk across the sector. For years, investors treated supply chain risk as a low-probability tail event. The pandemic forced a partial reassessment. The current conflict is completing it. Pharmaceutical companies are now modeling supply chain disruption as a recurring, not exceptional, cost. This changes capital allocation. Companies will invest more in dual sourcing, safety stock, and geographically diversified manufacturing even when such investments reduce short-term margins. The Critical Medicines Act formalizes this shift, making regulatory compliance rather than margin optimization the primary constraint. The implication for portfolio construction is that pharmaceutical companies with concentrated supply chains in geopolitically exposed regions carry uncompensated risk. Investors should scrutinize where active pharmaceutical ingredients are sourced, where final formulation occurs, and whether companies have credible plans to diversify. Companies without such plans will face margin pressure, either from actual disruptions or from the cost of emergency supply chain re-engineering. Conversely, companies with diversified, resilient supply chains will command premium valuations. This is not a theoretical shift. It is observable in how procurement teams are making decisions today, as evidenced by Merck's stockpiling commentary. The Plaquemines view: Europe's Critical Medicines Act is not just a regulatory response to past crises. It is a structural bet that government intervention can reshape pharmaceutical supply chains faster and more comprehensively than market forces. We believe the market is underestimating three dimensions of this shift. First, the speed of implementation. EU regulatory processes are often slow, but when member states align on strategic priorities, as they have on pharmaceutical security post-pandemic, execution accelerates. Expect the Act to move from provisional approval to enforceable regulation within 12 to 18 months, with procurement mandates taking effect shortly thereafter. Second, the extraterritorial impact. While the Act applies to the EU, its effects will ripple globally. Pharmaceutical companies selling into Europe will need to comply with sourcing and stock requirements even if their headquarters are elsewhere. This will force multinational pharma to reorganize supply chains on a regional basis, creating inefficiencies but also opportunities for regional specialists. Third, the mergers and acquisitions catalyst. We see the Act triggering a wave of defensive acquisitions as pharma companies buy European manufacturing capacity to ensure compliance. This will particularly benefit mid-market CDMOs and specialty manufacturers in generics and biosimilars. Private equity funds with European manufacturing platforms should see strong exit opportunities over the next 24 months as strategic buyers pay premiums for regulatory compliant assets. The deeper insight is that the Critical Medicines Act represents a philosophical shift in how governments approach pharmaceutical markets. For decades, the assumption was that free markets, optimized for cost efficiency, would ensure supply. That assumption is dead. Governments now view pharmaceutical supply as a national security issue, and they will use regulatory and financial tools to ensure domestic capacity. This is a permanent change, not a temporary reaction. The institutional capital opportunity lies in businesses positioned at the intersection of regulatory compliance and supply chain resilience. Companies offering EU-based manufacturing, diversified sourcing, or logistics solutions that reduce supply chain risk will see sustained demand growth independent of underlying pharmaceutical market dynamics. The bottom line: the Critical Medicines Act's provisional approval marks the beginning, not the end, of Europe's pharmaceutical supply chain transformation. As the Iran conflict demonstrates, supply disruptions are no longer hypothetical. Companies and investors that treat regulatory mandates for onshore manufacturing and strategic stockpiling as compliance burdens rather than market opportunities will find themselves on the wrong side of capital flows. The next 18 months will separate companies with resilient, geographically diversified supply chains from those still optimized for a globalized world that no longer exists. Position accordingly, European CDMOs, manufacturers with dual-source strategies, and logistics providers enabling stockpile management are where institutional capital should focus. The premium for supply security is no longer theoretical. It is being priced in real time.